I'm here talking with John Courage, candidate for the 21st Congressional District in Bexar, Travis, Comal, and Hays counties.
And Blanco.
And Blanco. John, let's start with the fact that you've been kind of a minor celebrity among the Netroots with your race against Lamar Smith. You got an endorsement from Russ Feingold and his Patriot PAC. You're in running for another one from Mark Warner's Moving Forward PAC. How has the response been from the Netroots, and how has that helped your campaign?
Well, the response has been terrific. And, you know, you need to go back even a little further back. The first inkling I got of real Netroot support was when I was nominated to be supported by Democracy for America, when they did their grassroots all-star poll back
in
last summer. And all I did was just ask my friends to vote for me here in San Antonio. And, you know, San Antonio is a real tech area. And of course, up the road in Austin, when I started talking to people up there, many of whom are supporters of DFA and were, you know, DENIACs when Dean was active, they just jumped on with both feet and spread the word. And I think I have developed a certain following among people on the Netroots and on the Internet about what's going on in my campaign. And I understand that because I've got a unique name. I mean, how many candidates are there running named Courage? And certainly I'll take advantage of any kind of notoriety I can get along those lines to increase my visibility and let people know who I am. And then I can get my message out when people are willing to listen to who I am.
How has that translated into tangible results? Finances, volunteer support, so on?
Well, you just named two of them, volunteer support and finance support. Both polls that I won, the sponsors of the polls gave me a direct contribution from their political action fund, which is always a shot in the arm for every candidate. But I got hundreds of contributions from people who had been following both polls and who had voted. And that's a big boost in the arm, too. You know, when you get hundreds of people sending you, even if it's $10, $25, $50, all that adds up in a political campaign. Unfortunately, money's still the mother's milk of politics. And until we change that, which I'm committed to do someday, you know, we have to do all that we can to raise money so that we can raise awareness and get our message out. When you run against anyone who's been in office, they have so many things going for them as far as sending out newsletters and being quoted by the newspapers that it's hard for a challenger to compete without raising money to get the message out themselves. And so, you know, Netroots was really the beginning of me being able to successfully raise money to help get my message out and become known.
How would you describe your message at this time?
Well, it's a message of I want to restore honesty and integrity to our government. It's critical at this point in time. I want to go ahead and ensure that everybody feels like the government is working for them and not for the private interests and the special interests in this country. And so that's a major part of my message. But I really key in on, I think, a shared vision that all Americans have and that all Texans have. And I talk about this. It's a vision of education, good public education, quality public education for all children, all the way up through college where we support higher education. And the Republican administration has not done that. Excuse me. And then healthcare is a big issue with all Americans. You know, we share a vision of having a healthcare system that's accessible and affordable for all Americans, and everybody believes in that. And I think we have a shared vision of an environment in this country, one where we have clean air, clean water, clean earth to grow healthy food in, one where we're not polluting all the time, one where we develop innovative new alternative energy resources to power our cars and our factories and, you know, to create jobs for this country rather than just relying on petroleum that continues to pollute everything. You know, and that's a vision I think all Americans share for, you know, the environment. I think we share a lot of common visions, and that's something that I try and put out in my messages to people. And so that's part of what I talk about.
Let's talk about an issue that I know your opponent is well known for, and that's immigration.
Mm-hmm.
Lamar Smith is one of the leading voices in Congress for restricting immigration. What is your position and how does it contrast with his?
Well, he's an extremist. I mean, he came out very early on saying we ought to build a wall, that we ought to go ahead and train and arm civilians to go support the Border Patrol if Bush wasn't going to go ahead and activate our military to do that. And that's a very extreme position. And as a matter of fact, 10 years ago, he sat as the chairman of the House Immigration Committee, which is a subcommittee of the Judiciary Committee. And on that committee, he helped author some of the worst immigration legislation that's ever been written. The immigration that wanted to deny people health care, children health care, deny them an education. It was really legislation that punished the children for the decisions their parents made. Many aspects of it were overturned by the courts because they really denied due process. So, you know, he's always been extreme on that issue. On the other hand, I recognize that people who come to this country are economic refugees. That's why they come to this country. They want to go ahead and earn a living for themselves. They want to go ahead and take care of their families. They want to pursue the American dream that we've pursued being born here. They have not been able to do that in their home country. A lot of them have economic turmoil, they have political turmoil. They're economic refugees just coming here because the jobs are here. Part of that is because corporate America has kept the wages so low that Americans don't want to take those jobs. That my children, relatives of yours who are in high school and college don't want to work for $5.15 an hour. They can get other jobs or they can just continue working on their education. But those are jobs that need to be done. And so, because corporations keep those jobs down, they're enticing foreign workers to come into this country. They're enticing, you know, economic immigrants to come here. And so, I think that's, you know, part of the situation that we need to put a stop to. And, you know, if we had only enforced the restrictions put on business and corporations 10 years ago that would have clamped down on them allowing, looking the other way, when undocumented workers were coming to work for them, we probably wouldn't have the situation we have today. But the federal government never supported that part of the bill. They never did anything to coerce businesses to make sure that their workers were truly documented, because they knew the businesses would rather keep foreign workers coming in for $5 an hour than have to pay an American 9 or 10.
You are a military veteran. One of the Band of Brothers candidates. How does that shape the campaign that you're running? What do you believe are the top issues? I mean, obviously Iraq, but what do you believe needs to be done with the military?
Well, you know, I served from 71 to 75. I volunteered, and I really appreciate my service. It did so much for me, and so I have an understanding of those men and women who have worn a uniform and carried a weapon and stood at post to defend their country, whether it was here in America or overseas. And I have talked to a lot of veterans throughout my campaign. As a matter of fact, I had an open house for veterans about a month ago, and there were 30 men and women who had served in the military, many ranks, many different branches of the service, and we just had a roundtable discussion about what their concerns were, because I kind of had my own idea what concerns are. But you know, I think if you're going to represent people, if you're going to go to Congress, you need to really hear from the people what their concerns are. And they were pretty much as I thought. Most people who served in the military and are retired today are really upset that they feel like the promises and pledges made to them and their families for their service have not been kept. They were promised that they would have health care for life after they retired, and now they're paying for it. They were promised that their families would be taken care of, and now their families aren't, and again, they're having to pay for it. They were promised that the services would be there for them, yet the Republican administration consistently reduces the amount of money that goes into veteran services so that those services aren't available, or you have to wait longer times to get those services. We know that up until about 18 months ago, the federal government literally shut the door on veterans trying to get services, trying to get into the VA system, because there were so many veterans that needed and wanted that service, but the federal government did not want to pay the price to provide those kinds of services. There are veterans who got out of the service, they went to school under the GI Bill for a few years, and after 10 years, if they didn't use it all, they lost it. They'd like to see an extension of that, because we all go through changes in our lives where sometimes you need to go ahead and get retrained for a second or a third career. But if you've used your entitlement for college, or haven't used it within 10 years, you lose it. That's another concern. But the biggest concern is probably the availability and affordability of health care to veterans. A lot of times veterans serve in the military and they get out and they don't recognize what kind of health concerns they're going to have until years later. For example, Vietnam vets who are suffering from problems with Agent Orange, or now the vets who've been serving in the Iraq War in the early 90s and this one with the depleted uranium and the problems it's covering. Sometimes those things don't come out for years, and veterans are concerned that the services aren't being there for them.
The situation in Iraq, where do we go from here?
Well, I'll tell you, my personal belief is, and a lot of veterans I've talked to and military people believe the same thing, we're in the middle of a civil war. There are three distinct groups in Iraq that right now have three distinct areas of influence, and they're really fighting with each other to a great extent over how the future of Iraq's going to develop, and we're in the middle of it. We brought it about through our own entrance into this war, but our men and women, I don't think, should stay in the middle of it. What we need to do right now is redeploy our troops to some safe harbors, places like Kuwait and Bahrain and other sites in the general area where we can be supportive if we're really needed in the event that the new government can't sustain itself, or in the event that there's a real threat that develops in those areas against the United States. But honestly, I think redeployment to some safe areas, and then as quickly as possible, as quickly as practical, bring all of those troops home. America can't be the policeman of the world. The United States created the situation in Iraq, and I don't think we can solve the situation. We need to get out of there and allow the people in Iraq and in the Middle East to solve that problem themselves. Now, that's not to say that I don't think we have interests that we need to defend and work towards resolving, you know, to help America. You know, we're friends with Israel. I think we ought to stand by that friendship. To the same way of thinking, though, I think we also need to work with Israel to develop a resolution between the Israeli and Palestinian problem, because that really is the root of all the conflict in the Middle East. And the United States needs to help resolve that problem if we can, and a lot of other things I think would be resolved if we could.
Going back to veterans' issues for just a moment, there was a story recently about how the Veterans Administration lost a bunch of personal data for vets. A laptop that it was on was stolen. How do you address this?
Well, it seems unbelievable to me that there wouldn't be security on those kinds of records. We don't know all the details. We don't know how many of them have their social security numbers in there, their health records in there, any other records about families, even where they live, things of that nature. That are personal identification pieces of material that can adversely affect someone's life if it falls into the wrong hands. We don't know all the details. What we do know is that the information disappeared, and we didn't know it for weeks and months at a time. And I think that it's unbelievable that as much as this Republican administration talks about national security, how we can't even keep our own records secure of our veterans. And, you know, I think federal government needs to step up and ensure that all of that personal information doesn't adversely affect the private lives and the financial lives and the financial well-beings of these military veterans and their families.
There's a proposal by, I believe, Senator Harkin of Iowa to fund extra credit checks for the veterans who might be affected by this. Do you support that proposal?
Yes, I absolutely do. I think that that is the least we can do to ensure that that private information is as protected as it can be, and that we don't see massive identity theft against our veterans.
You ran against Congressman Smith in 2002 in what was a very different district before
yes.
the 2003 redistricting. Mm-hmm. What did you learn from that race, and how is that helping you this time?
Well, I did learn a lot. You know, when I ran the first time, I chose to probably be rather idealistic about what it would take to win that race. I called on a lot of people to volunteer, and I got a lot of help. I called on a lot of people to contribute, but I didn't put a lot of emphasis on raising money. I had thought that issues and character would make a difference in the campaign. But what really thwarted my effort in 2002 was what happened in 2001 with 9/11 and with the basic call to arms that Bush had as he toured the country in 2002, just telling everybody we've been attacked, we need to stick together, get in line behind me. That became the only issue that concerned Americans in the 2002 election. And it made it very difficult for me to talk about things like Social Security and Medicare and education and veterans benefits and the environment. So where I hoped to win on issues and character, I was fighting an uphill battle against people who were concerned about terrorism, security, and national defense. So the issues were different, and I've learned that I need to go ahead and be better prepared to address whatever the issues are at the time. Fortunately, the Republicans have given us a wealth of issues to run on this time, and the biggest ones, quite honestly, our honesty and integrity, and the attack, I think, on our constitutional rights and civil liberties in this country that have been led by this Republican administration, as well as their borrow and spend policies that are driving us closer and closer to bankruptcy. I mean, we've got a $9 trillion debt we're running up on that was less than $5.6 trillion when Bush took over. It's disastrous for this country. And so those are some of the issues that the Republicans have given us, as well as things like Duke Cunningham and Tom DeLay and so many others. And I think that the Republicans and the independent-minded voters in this country are seeing that, and they're fed up, and they're looking for some change. So now when I can talk about educational issues and healthcare issues and Social Security issues and in issues about national security and things like that, people are willing to listen because they're looking for a change. So that's helped my campaign. Also, as you said, the district is different. Before, it was much more rural. Now it's much more urban and suburban. And so I'm able to get out into a lot more of those areas and campaign more vigorously, and that helps. And I've really committed to raising some significant money. And that's because I think all of us know mother's milk is, our money's still the mother's milk of politics. And until we change that system, we need to raise significant money to get our message out. I probably can't knock on enough doors to meet 125 or 30,000 voters that I need to convince to vote for me. So when my opponent starts throwing mailers in the mail or starts putting TV or newspaper or radio ads out there, I need to be prepared to counter the untruths that he says about me with the truth about myself and the truth about his record. I'm not running against Lamar Smith. I'm running against his record in Congress, which is terrible.
You've referenced a couple times changing the nature of funding campaigns. What's your vision for that?
Well, I think we ought to have publicly funded campaigns. Personally, what I would like to see is on a national level, as we had a few years ago, people could check off a certain amount of money that would go toward the national public financing for the presidential race. I'd like to see that expanded. And a few years ago, it was tax deductible. It hasn't been tax deductible now. What I'd like to see us do is be able to reallocate a portion of our taxes directly toward a national election campaign fund that would cover all federal races. In other words, taxpayer could say, I want to designate $100 of my tax dollars to go into public financing for the congressional and national presidential elections. And I think that would develop a pool of enough money, great enough, to where we can eliminate the private money, the special interest money that goes into public campaigns. So then your campaigns do become campaigns of issues and character, not who can raise the most money or who can go ahead and hire the best people to develop a message.
Doc Hertz, thank you very much for talking with me. Good luck in your campaign.
I appreciate it a lot. Thanks, Charles.